Assurance we have as the people of God, people of hope, and because we've hope, we're confident in this world, no matter what comes our way. Now, we are going to have a little picture presentation, and I want to sort of explain, the first couple of minutes are actually just showing you the house that we stayed in. And you maybe think that's a bit strange, but we actually went out on a wee bit of a limb in deciding to get a big house, even though we didn't necessarily have the people to fill it. And it was a wonderful thing. It was a great base. So excuse my very heavy Belfast accent commentary. Thank you. But that's a few shots, and more of that will become clear. But this is just us arriving at the house. Folks didn't even know I was walking around with my phone. So this is just to let you see where we stayed. Do I need to click again? There we go.
Remember this, guys, it's a rough enough place we're staying in. We've all just arrived, and I'll give you a wee tour of our house. That'll be Michelle Ray's bedroom in here. Joe has been putting a room by himself. It's sound insulated through your kitchen, which is amazing. I'll give you a wee look out the back. Big decking area. Swings and all that. So, another room in through here. Didn't even know it was here. And that'd be a good wee room to maybe gather in. Kitchen again. Maybe you see this. Here's Carson being interviewed.
Well done.
So, here we go. Up the stairs.
He said he brought
some
for her.
Members. Bedrooms everywhere.
Do not disturb on the door.
Right.
Instagram.
That's about 4 or 5 bedrooms, and then here's the upper bit where I think Johnny, there he is, sitting eating one, you know, quite on. I'm recording this for the folks.
So that was just to let you see where we actually were staying. It was brilliant. And that sort of hustle and bustle and buzz and all, that really, it was great for that. It was a super time. So just very, very quickly, what's going to happen is there's actually 8 different members of the team are going to be taking part. They've been told 2 or 3 minutes to just leave us with one reflection that they had on the week. If you go over your time, I'll tell you you're over your time. So very quickly, there's the team. And you can see Donald there as well. Also in the back row,
Martin,
who came with Donald as well. And then the rest, obviously, you see. Isn't that a great photograph? There's their meal time, and then we had our wee time together each morning before we went into the team meetings, the wider team, and they were great times as well. Now that in the bottom there, that's the sort of bigger team meeting in Drogheda Presbyterian Church. We met there all 5 mornings as well. But that's Paul and Sorka, who were really the pulse of the thing and directing us. Very, very impressive guys. They were actually up on Monday at the Bangor Convention and Tuesday morning as well. It was lovely to renew fellowship with them. Paul is chairman of the board of OM in the South, and Sorka is his wife, and they're just very committed folks. Very serious, very organized, which was really helpful. You know, they kept us right. We owe them a great debt. So this is a video again, I think, just to give a wee impression, I think. That's what it was like. You know, just a incredible wee small snapshot. Actually, that row of shops with the shutters down. That's where I had my most significant conversations, actually. But as I say, they were talking about, on the Friday, they were talking about 700,000 people having been at the FLA. I mean, you wouldn't have got that impression. There were people everywhere, but... So what else have we got? Yes, the road sweepers nearly collected him. People, you know, it was hard going, and at times you had to sit down. So that is not representative, but why Jesus has some subscribers now. That was, I think it was Michelle and Leah.
And Suzanne.
And Suzanne just fell in with those young girls, and they were very, very happy to talk and stuff. But I did mention this morning that, I don't know about the rest of the team, but in the whole week, I saw two booklets on the ground, and we gave out between 2,000 and 2,500 booklets. A lot of them were in the context of a small conversation. So, you know, if our confidence is in the gospel to do its own work, it's just one way of... my favourite incident, just this is my favourite incident. By the end of the week, despite the vast number of people that were there, you were starting to meet people who were saying, oh, I've got that. I've got that when you offered it. My favourite one was two young girls. They probably looked about 17, 18. And they were dressed in that sort of way they're dressing now. Sound like your granda. But the wee tight shorts things. And I was talking to one girl and she said she would take it. And I said to the other girl, and what about yourself? And she just went, I've got it already. So she'd been walking about with it, and I thought, well, that's brilliant. Imagine doing that and not binning it. It was great. So, look, that's just to give you sort of some sort of visual side to it. Joe is first man up to share.
I just wrote a few things down, but now that I've found out that Donald's here with his daughter, I have to score some of these out. I can't talk about that, nor that. No, Donald, I can't talk about that. Oh, I can talk about the amount of food you had for your lunch, can I? No, I'll leave that out as well. I'll just go back onto this wee one here. No, seriously, it was a great time. I had a brilliant time, well looked after by the troops. Got a nice bedroom and all to myself. The one thing I found very, very exciting for me was going down into town. The first day I had to walk about 10, 15 minutes. By the time I got down into town, I had to sit down. I was absolutely done out. But it was sort of parking out for me right into the town centre. And everybody wanted to go in my car then. But they couldn't all go. But the guy that looked after me in the car park, I said to him, would you take a couple of books that we gave him? He says, certainly. And I give him, he says, my mother's a Christian. I was a Christian. I says, well, that made Sparky into reading it, so if you give those to your mother. And then walking back to the car, I said, hold on a minute. I put my hand in the big bag and got my big Why Jesus book out and walked over. And I says, give that to your mother as well, Stan. I think you'll have a read at it. Not only did he give it to his mother, his auntie and all was involved in reading them. So I thought that was very inspiring. And all the lads that were doing the stations where they're stopping people getting into town, the barriers and all, nearly every one of them were Christians. And we just thought it was amazing. And then one night near the end, Jeff and I were walking down and he was standing beside me. That's when I was lying there drunk. I was just standing watching this guy doing a sketch of a girl, a young girl, and you thought he'd just lifted her face and put it on this board. It was that good. And this voice said to me, what are you doing? I look at the guy sitting down on the steps. I says, I'm just looking at this here. He says, what's that you have there? Oh, he says, a couple of wee booklets, say Christian booklets. He says, can I have one? I says, you can have two. So I was ending up about over half an hour talking to him. I thought it was just amazing. He was listening and listening and listening and talking. And then we were ready to head up. And I said, look, we'd have to go. He says, well, I've got to get this guy back anyway. So I got up and walked over to Jeff, and Jeff says, that was good. I says, oh, he told me he was a Muslim, and Jeff just busted out laughing. What was he the night before? He was a Buddhist the night before. But the point about it was, I said he took two books off me, and Jeff said, well, he wouldn't take any last night. He said he refused point blank to take them last night. I said, well, I didn't even ask him. He asked me for them. So I thought it was inspiring even to hear that. But the amount of people that did want to know and are asking questions, it is unbelievable. That's just my light bit of it. 2 minutes is nearly up. So I'll just leave it at that because he pulled me off this.
Well, as we walked around the streets of Drogheda, I must say, I've never in my life been so conscious that we were in a spiritual battle. You know, I found it difficult, I found it daunting, and I was a huge way out of my comfort zone. But as I walked around the streets, mostly with Patrick, we went in pairs. I prayed this, Lord, lead me to some soul today. Teach me, Lord, just what to say. Someone shared that with one of our team times. I don't know who it was. Somebody famous said it. I can't remember who. But I just prayed that as I walked around Drogheda. And you know what? If you pray that and you mean it, God will give you opportunities. And so that was one thing that I learned during the week. On the Wednesday night, there was a girl approached Patrick and she asked him, could he recycle her beer can? And that sort of started an opportunity. We got chatting to her. She was very friendly. She listened to what we had to say. She said her belief was that the Bible was written by someone who was insane. As the conversation progressed, we asked her name. She said it was Grace. So, of course, we tried to explain to her what grace meant in the Bible, and that it meant that God gave you something that you didn't deserve, and we tried to explain about salvation. Her response was that she hated her name because it was too holy, but we talked to her for a few more minutes. She gave us a hug when we were leaving, and I would just ask you to pray for Grace, that she would come to understand how wonderful God's grace is and understand it and accept God's salvation that he's provided for her. The challenge of the week, you don't have to go to Drogheda to have opportunities to witness. I suppose it taught me that, you know, if you want them and look for them, that God will provide them and he will give you the courage to take them.
I want to hang my comments off a little portion from 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 12. And Paul says, when I came to Troas to preach the gospel of Christ, even though a door was open for me in the Lord, my spirit was not at rest because I did not find my brother Titus there. So I took leave and went on to Macedonia. Sometimes we think of the Apostle Paul as being an impregnable evangelism machine, you know, with no emotion or no fears or no concerns. But even the Apostle Paul's spirit was not at rest because he didn't find his brother Titus there. Now, one of the things that I found was a great benefit of the whole project was the cohesion of the team. You know, being out on the street, feeling very alone, and then all of a sudden you see Patrick and Jan walking along. Oh, how are you getting on? And even, you know, the team times in the morning, the aftermath discussions, you know, all of that was, it served to sort of bolster things. And I found that a very encouraging thing. So that aspect of fellowship was great. And then I was struck during the week by a term that Jeff used to describe the proceedings. He says it was like being in a spiritual gymnasium. You know, if you imagine these martial arts instructional videos where they say, now you put your hand like this, no, not like that, like this, now hit me like that. You know, in a real life situation in the street, it just doesn't happen like that. And so you can have all sorts of apologetic refinements in your thoughts, and then all of a sudden you meet a real person who says, I think the design of the eye is, insert expletive there. So in other words, we're used to being in a church, and you know that it's great when the amenometer is going like that, and people are encouraging, and it's wonderful, and it's self-reinforcing. And then you go out, and then someone says, I actually think that your God is rubbish. It's like a punch to the solar plexus. And so that was an interesting experience for me, meeting all sorts of people who you knew were not going to agree with what you were saying. But I found it, although a little bit of a shock to the system, it was actually spiritually enabling in the long run. And we met a number of different types of people. People from all sorts of perspectives. There were intellectuals, church historians. There was a guy who thought that God was a vibration. I think it might have been the same guy that you and Joe. Yes, yep. So he's obviously religion fluid, a particular guy. There was another guy who's from the Legion of Mary. He said, you know, you need to give that book to someone who actually needs it. Totally unaware of his own situation. There was another chap who was confused, a guy on drugs, and I had a great conversation with him, and he was extremely friendly. And if you want the detail on that, I can tell you later on. There's other people just totally disinterested, taken up with the cares of the world. I've got bills to pay, said one man, unaware of the bill that was paid on Calvary. Other people who wanted to slice and dice God, a guy called Michael who said, listen, God is a God of love, and you know that's all I'm interested in. Not aware that God is also a God of justice, that sin needed to be answered for. Atheistic types. A large proportion of people were disillusioned with the Catholic Church. Oh, I was brought up Catholic, but because of all of the stuff that's on the news, I'm an atheist now. And that was quite a large proportion of people had that outlook. And then the final thing that I want to say was sort of struck me. I was talking to one guy one particular night, and you know, I was going through all the stuff, and he just stopped me and said, what is it that drives you? You know, what makes you tick? Why are you here? And what I took out of that was, you know, I mean, think of it, put yourself in their position. If you're walking along the street and someone stops you and says, would you like a gospel booklet and would you like to talk about Christ? You would kind of remember that, wouldn't you? It's not every day that happens. So my thought is, who knows the impact that even being accosted by a northerner wielding a gospel tract, who knows what impact long term that would have on someone as they would read. And I guess the final thing that I would say is that all of these different people, despite their different outlooks, all have one thing in common, and that is the situation that they're lost and without Christ. And of course, all we can do is leave the seed that has been planted and hope that God will bring forth the increase. Thank you.
Yeah, so it was really my first time going away with Castlebury since I've joined it, and I really enjoyed the week actually going. I found it really challenging. The beginning of the week, the first night that we went out, I just kind of froze. So I did, and I had all my leaflets in my pocket, and my hand was holding it ready to take it out, but I couldn't take it out of my pocket. And it upset me, and I started thinking, you know, I'm letting God down, I'm letting myself down, I'm letting the team down. But you know, as the week went on, you know, I just had to keep telling myself, you know, that the Bible does say you can do all things through Christ, and the Word doesn't say some things, it says all things. So you had to stand on His Word and just trust that. You weren't doing it in your own strength, you're doing it in His. As the week went on then as well, they've got loads of opportunities to speak to people. And one of the wee ones that stood out to me was actually me and Michelle were together and got speaking to a group of girls, and one was a nurse, and she was saying, you know, you sort of broke in with like a survey that we were using, said that any big sort of burning questions, what would they be? And I had to warn them, like, I might not be able to answer them, but I'd try. And she had said about, you know, why there's so many bad things that happen in the world and the children get taken away from their mothers in sickness. We got chatting to her, and I said, you know, do you have a belief, or, you know, do you pray to anybody? And she said that, you know, she's Catholic and she would pray to God. And she says, oh, but I pray to Mary. Yes, I pray to her. You know, she was very strong in that. And that's one thing I find challenging, because I don't have a lot of, like, knowledge on Catholicism. So that was something that I took away from it, is I need to learn more about that to even be able to challenge people and to know a wee bit more about their faith. But at this point then, I tried to go into the verse, I think it's in 1 Timothy, where my walking, talking Bible came in handy, also known as Michelle. She came in and was able to recite the verse, but then it's also in the track, so I was able to open it up and show her that I wasn't just plucking up from thin air, but that there's only one mediator. So yeah, that's what I really took away from it, was that you know, I need to go and even learn maybe a wee bit more about other religions to be able to try and challenge them. But also, like I says, that, you know, you're never doing things in your own strength. And not long after, I actually found like a wee thing on the webs or on the internet that said that Jesus didn't say that you will feel like I'm with you always. He says, I am with you always. And that's what you just have to really learn to stand on. So thanks.
All right. I'm sure we can all agree it certainly wasn't a holiday. It was challenging. It was tough. But I was always told at the start, always make yourself available. So that's what I did, and I was glad to be there. Two experiences I took from it was the first night, I think it was Anne, is that right, Jeff? Lady Anne. There was a bunch of teenagers, and there was no way I was going over the bunch of teenagers, you know, just judge them, book by the cover, just judge them, and Anne says, no, let's go over to them. So we went over to them and Anne got straight on with them, and I was just listening and just what she said to them, how receptive they were. They took a track, shook her hands, were very approachable. So that was number one, just not judging a big batch cover, because we're very quick to do that. I won't speak for myself, I am. The second one was an atheist woman that I came across. Her kids were walking past, and easy target kids. Give them a track. The dad ended up taking the track off the kid and give it back to the kid. Then the mum came and she took it and she approached me and she says, you know, what is this? And I says, well, we're a bunch of Christians from down Belfast and stuff. And she goes, right, okay, I'm an atheist. But that sort of, she says, I respect you as Christians. We were talking and her kid came over to me and her kid said about, could I help you hand the tracks out? And I just thought that was incredible. The mum, an atheist mum, was willing to let her kids not only keep a track, but also hand them out to the people around. And then I offered her one at the end, but she says, sure, the kids have one, and maybe get a look. So that as well, I took that from it, the sense that you can't, even with an atheist parent or whatever their situation is, people are approachable. Not everybody's against you. As a Christian, it's not easy, but that's what I took from it. And I was just glad to be there. And yeah, that's all I've got to say.
Just as Michelle comes, I was with her and the side when that was happening. The wee guy who's given out the tracks, every single person took one from him. He had no refusals, he came back for more.
Just get ready for the song that we're going to sing after this. I'm just going to stand here. Paul, when we were at our team talks, talked about Jesus when he met the woman at the well. And the one thing that he kept repeating that stuck in my head was that Jesus was intentional about what he did. He was intentional. And it brought to my mind a couple of verses in 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 15. It says, "The saying is trustworthy and deserving of full acceptance, that Christ Jesus came into the world to save sinners." And Luke chapter 19, verse 10, "The Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." Jesus was intentional about what he knew, why he had come into the world. I found it very difficult. I thought I would find it easier, but the Lord had lessons to teach. And I found it very difficult. And that first night, I can honestly say, we came back to the house and I felt as if I'd gone around with Mike Tyson and he had certainly beaten me up. I felt like an imposter. I felt guilty. I don't give out tracks at home, so what am I doing down here giving out tracks? I had imposter syndrome. I'm a northerner and I've come down to tell the southerners how they can meet God. And I felt bad. But God very quickly brought a remedy to my mind. He said, okay, so you don't do it up home. When you go back, start. Get over yourself, Michelle, and get on with the job for which you've come down. So with that in my heart, I went on and tried to do it. But I also had a challenge to my own spiritual walk with God. And I think when you find yourself in a difficult situation and you're sharing the gospel, it does cause you to look into your own heart. And I was reading in Ephesians about walking worthy. live a life worthy of the calling you have received. And I can honestly say my conscience was full of guilt, for I'm not necessarily walking the life that I should. And Ephesians chapter 5, verse 15, be careful how you live. And I think as a Christian, I find it easier to be careless rather than careful. And Satan could have had a field day, but the Lord allowed me, in spite of myself and with my failings, yet again, get over yourself, deal with the problems in your life, sort it out, but don't withhold the gospel from those that need it. So I want to leave a few women with you. I want to leave Louise with you. She was a Catholic theologian, or so she said. She took a tract and said that she would read it and she would correspond through email. So I really would love to get into a conversation with Louise. There was Winnie, a delightful elderly woman who looked a bit lost. And even though I'm not from Drogheda, I went up to her and asked her if I could help. And then said, I'm not from here, so I really don't know where to direct you to. But it led to a warm conversation where we were able to share, I was able to share the gospel with her. And then there was Nolene, another older woman, a disillusioned Catholic lady who had been let down by her church, but yet wanted to hold on tightly to it in order to get into heaven. And then two young lads, Declan and Owen, and I loved them. I just loved those two lads. We were in a cafe and they were trying to have their lunch, and this crazy woman sat down beside them, and before they knew it, she wasn't just sitting at the table beside them, she was at their table and she was sharing the gospel with them. And they got, bless them, they were so polite, but they got a Why Jesus book as well for their troubles. And then one young lady, I sat down on the curb beside this lovely young girl, and I said, could you take this wee book, it's about Jesus. And she just turned around to me and she said, Jesus would hate me. Jesus wouldn't like me. Now that's a platform for anybody to preach the gospel. And I said, can I tell you, I know that Jesus loves you because Jesus died for you. You don't die for somebody that you don't love. So I got to share the gospel with her. I don't know her name, but I got to give her a booklet about how Jesus loved her. We were scattering seed. We were giving God's word. And all we can now do is pray that God's Spirit works in hearts. The servant wasn't worthy, but the message is too marvelous to keep to ourselves.
Well, as you can see, I wasn't one of the original team. I was kind of a blow-in. I came down on Thursday morning, managed to get lost on the way there. I don't know whether God was trying to tell me something. But before I had gone on the WhatsApp group, Jeff's texts were coming through about how challenging it was, and it was a real challenge last night, and it was challenging. So with that in mind, I was going down for the day. And as Michelle had kind of said, I thought, well, you know, it'll be all right. It'll maybe be difficult, but I'll be all right. I'll be okay. And when we went in the afternoon, I was like a rabbit in headlights. I literally was just like, what do I do? Who do I go to? These people are walking towards me. Meanwhile, my sister is walking off to groups of teenagers and talking to them, and I'm standing going, completely out of my comfort zone and completely out of my depth. And what Jeff did say about it being challenging, it's exactly what it was. It wasn't just a simple put a leaflet through the door. You were actually face to face with people. And for me, it was probably more of a personal challenge in that I faced the reality of these people who were there enjoying themselves. And I too would have, you know, I enjoy music, I enjoy festivals. But to be on the other side of that for the purpose of giving these people hope actually made me realise how lost these people were. And that really, really hit home for me. The fact that I have members of my family who are lost. The fact that my children, this is the world that is there for them. How faithfully do I pray for them? And that was a real challenge for me. And I found that whilst I was there, it's not the best I could do. All I could do was pray. I couldn't do it on my own strength. When I did finally pluck up the courage at night time to sort of start talking to people, I did find, however, that my penchant for talking to people was older men. Of which my sister did come and save me at one stage as I walked over to two drunk men. But I did find that it was easier to talk to older men. People with dogs, really easy to start up a conversation with them about dogs. Young people, very, like Ryan, I was like, there's no way I'm going over there, because I know if that was me when I was that age, I would have told them where to go. So I avoided them. Whilst Michelle, she went and I prayed. I just thought, if that's what I have to do, that's what I have to do. So my first two conversations on the evening, spent quite a bit of time with two people, and they didn't want to know. Just, they refused. And that really disheartened me, and I kind of thought, right, God, what do I do here? You know, I'm really struggling. And God just said, be yourself and allow me to work through you. And as you can see from one of the photographs, that was my idea. A girl stopped us and said, would you take a picture? And I said, yes, certainly, I'll take a picture if you take one of these booklets from me. She says, no problem. So she took the picture. And then I said, look, do you want me to take a, you know, group picture? And I said, sure, tell you what, I'll give you all one of these wee leaflets and you can take those and we'll take a picture. And, you know, and I just found that by being myself, God was able to use me. And whilst I maybe didn't have the deep conversations with people, I had to trust that God's bigger than me, and the seed of that little book, and I can just pray that those books that have been given out, and as Michelle had said, the verse that I had as well, I beg you to live in a way that is worthy of the people God has chosen to be his own. And that has really struck home with me, that I need to be really careful how I live before people, even at home, and how faithful I am in praying for them. Sorry, I just wanted to read this before I am finished, Jeff. Jeff sent us through this, I don't know, website thing. It says, serving out of your comfort zone will expose weaknesses in ways that will cause you to come before the Lord in desperate need of help, not to be affirmed in our strength, but to depend on his.
Take comfort from the fact that I'm the last.
I guess there are a couple of things. First of all, the absolute spiritual darkness and oppression was something that really struck me. As the numbers, as the crowds built up, to sort of shuffle your way down the streets and look into the faces of so many people, especially later as the evening progressed and the alcohol flowed, you just got the impression of thousands of people just going nowhere. And, you know, it took me to go to the south of Ireland to see that. Secondly, you know, among all the people who are out for a good time, there were some hopeless people. Maureen talked to a woman who, you know, obviously knew nothing of the gospel, was sitting on a seat and just was lost.
And when Maureen explained the gospel to her, she said, is that all? Is it as simple as that? You know, and she just couldn't believe that God loved her and that it was as simple as that. Maureen and Pauline talked to a guy who was homeless, had been institutionalized in his younger life, had just gone from bad to worse, and was sitting in that seat and would stay there the rest of the night because he had nowhere else to go. We were all going back to our comfortable beds. And you know, to leave a guy like that, I think he was crying and the girls were crying too. You know, to leave a guy like that, if you didn't have the message of the gospel, what could you give him? I talked to a guy who had been a leader in the JWs all his life. He was in his early 70s. And within the last few years, had just jacked the whole thing in and now was absolutely opposed to anything to do with God. Wrote God, was angry. Pleasant enough with me, but very angry with God, who didn't exist. And as C.S. Lewis said, he was angry with God for not existing. You know, just one argument after another why God couldn't exist. And yet, at the end, he admitted that when his 45-year-old son was in for heart surgery, he missed the fact that he had no God now to pray to. Hopeless. And the last thing that I found very strengthening was, you know, the conviction grew that the gospel is the only answer. You know, there's no other hope for, you know, if a guy's sitting on a seat and he's homeless and he's hit rock bottom, unless you've got the gospel to give him, you have nothing for him. You can give him a clean bed, but I mean, you know, you've nothing to give him. And talking to people, I found it hard to make the initial contact. But the one thing I learned was that you have nothing to fear from, because they have no arguments that are going to floor you. There's nothing that they can say that you can't answer, because you've got Jesus Christ and you've got the answer to their problems. So, I mean, those are the things that I took away from it. Thanks very much.
I'm just going to close in prayer, but before I do that, I was writing down some of the words that people were using, some little phrases. Challenging. Difficult. A spiritual workout, tough, and out of our comfort zone. And I think you could put those all together, and that would sum up Drogheda for all of the team. You know, it wasn't a walk in the park. And, you know, a lot of the preconceived ideas and arguments and answers that you had in your sort of backpack went out the window whenever you were confronted with people who just were thinking outside our particular box. But you prayed for us, and we want to thank you for praying for us. And, you know, the weakness that we felt, you know, it's not a bad place to be, because that's where God works. And God takes our weakness, and he applies his strength. And, you know, Martin, who was with us, he gave us a great picture one morning. He pictured the farmer going out. And, you know, first of all, he ploughs the ground, and then he harrows the ground, and then he sows the seed. And he just pictured us as being the farmers going out through Drogheda, and some of us were crisscrossing it. We were ploughing, we were harrowing, some of us were sowing the seed. And who knows what the harvest will be? God is the Lord of the harvest. And we were just being links in the chain. And that was a great privilege for us to be. And we felt we felt all our weakness and all the difficulties that we did. But it was a joy for us to be just workmen for Christ, just to be sharing the gospel. We have the best news, the only hope that there is. And we were just simply doing our best. It was pretty pathetic at times. You know, we didn't have the answers that maybe we could have had. But, you know, God is pleased to use those. So let's pray just for what happened in Drogheda, and what is going on in the hearts and minds of men and women.